M. Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. Several ballots over several days, and Republican Kevin McCarthy is now the new Speaker of the House. But as CBS's Scott McFarlane reports, the hardest part is yet to come.
Now the work of this 118th Congress begins. The U.S. House must still pass a rules package and form its committees and get itself organized. But the question is, will it be defined and marred by the acrimony and bad blood that formed over what's supposed to be the simplest vote of all, this overnight vote for U.S. House Speaker?
Kevin McCarthy made several concessions to a small group of conservative Republicans who had blocked him from getting the Speaker's gavel. California just can't get a break. Here's Kelly Cass at the Weather Channel.
We've got flood watches already in place for much of California, and here's why. We are likely to experience flash flooding across the North San Francisco Bay Area. It is possible we see flash flooding, mudslides, landslides, that kind of thing, and even Monday into Tuesday, more heavy rain as our parade of storms continues.
The storms in recent days have already claimed the lives of at least six people. We're learning more about how investigators found the suspect in the murder of four college students in Idaho. CBS's Omar Villafranca reports.
Police say they tracked the criminal justice PhD student through his cell phone, and it pinged off towers near the crime scene at least 12 times before the attack. Police also say they think the suspect could have turned his phone off the morning of the murders, noting that Koberger's device didn't ping cell towers between 2:47 a.m. and 4:48 a.m.
The suspect was extradited from Pennsylvania and is being held without bail in Idaho. Police in Newport News, Virginia, say a teacher is in critical condition after being shot by a six-year-old student inside an elementary school classroom. Police Chief Steve R. Drew says this was not random.
We did not have an individual who was going around the school firing off rounds. We have an isolated location where the shooting occurred. And there will be more to follow about that. We do have the individual in custody.
The teacher was shot in the abdomen. No students were injured. Now for the Mega Millions.
No one hit all six numbers and won the $940 million jackpot.
Our first winning number tonight is 20. That's followed by 63. Up next, we have 46. Your next number is 59. And your final white ball number for this Friday evening is 3. Now for the Mega Ball number, that is 13.
Your odds of winning are 1 in 302 million. Economics professor Victor Matheson.
Winning the Powerball or the Mega Millions is like getting two hole-in-ones in a row when playing golf.
Mara Rubin, CBS News.
The next drawing is Tuesday. The estimated jackpot is $1.1 billion. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
WAUK 540 AM. New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The federal infrastructure law has been in effect for a year now. Community leaders around Wisconsin are optimistic about badly needed repairs and improvements. Here's Mike Moen.
At the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, Zach Brewing says so far nearly $3 billion in projects have been announced with funding from the law. Most are transportation-related, and Brewing says it's badly needed, as many areas have backlogs for priorities like road and bridge repairs.
And so by having a real strong federal partnership in the area of infrastructure helps address some of the backlog.
The law will also provide states funding for clean water infrastructure and expansion of high-speed internet. The plan did have some Republican opposition, but has otherwise been hailed by political analysts as a bipartisan achievement. Despite the significance of the law, some of those analysts say it hasn't stayed on the public's radar, especially during the recent election. But supporters are still getting the word out. Megan Rowe is with Opportunity Wisconsin, which has spent the last year educating communities about the benefits of these projects.
Whether we're spending less on car repairs due to updated roads and bridges, having access to safe drinking water or improved mass transit opportunities, this law is a once-in-a-generation investment in our state's infrastructure and competitiveness.
And as more projects are announced, Rose says it means additional well-paid union jobs for distressed areas. She says the long-term benefits from various improvements should particularly help rural areas and underserved communities. An interactive online map from the White House shows the projects so far are spread fairly evenly across Wisconsin. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
WAUK 540 AM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUK Radio.
Morning Cannolis with James Centel is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
And welcome to our second hour this morning, Saturday, January 7th, the Morning Cannolis. This is, as always, our weekly review of the rule of law in America. Law, government, the aspiration for justice in our nation. And we're chatting this morning in particular about January 6th once again, right before the hour, top of the hour break, talking about not only the Proud Boys trial continuing into the coming week, but also other pieces of litigation, prosecution going forward we're going to chat about. Right before the break, right before the break of our first hour, Joe also asked a much broader question that I think is very important to begin our second hour this morning. He was asking me about my philosophical views, my broad views, if you will, at the time of January 6th, watching, as did all of us, the horror, the nightmare of the attack on our Capitol. And then also thoughts about what that means long term. So I'll offer those not only in response to Joe's question, because it does provide an appropriate framework for what we're going to be talking about more generally this hour, which are additional issues in the rule of law and the support of our Constitution and our republic. Like all of you on January 6th, as the president said yesterday, horrified by what I was seeing. I spent some time many years ago actually working as a staffer on Capitol Hill, recalled very well the sanctity of that place. I suspect many of you likewise have been there, have taken tours, maybe even worked there on behalf of a representative in the United States Congress, a senator, a member of the House of Representatives. Certainly an important place to visit anytime you are in the United States Capitol there in Washington, D.C. A place of justice. I mentioned at the start of our first hour that it is significant that the Constitution begins with the legislature, and that our Capitol, as the physical embodiment of that, is often viewed as the core of our liberty, right? The core of our republic, that Capitol dome, the place where legislation happens, where the people are representative, key to our fundamental livelihood, our lives as Americans, key not only to legislation, but the ways in which we conduct business in our nation. And so, like the rest of you, in response to Joe's question, her inquiry of me about my response, horrified to see not only the physicality of this, and we have certainly heard an awful lot more, not even on the screens on January 6th, about the horrific violence. One of the people honored at the White House yesterday talked about it as a war zone. And we've gotten an awful lot more indication that this was just that. People died that day in our Capitol. About 140 officers hugely injured. And so as horrific as those images were, as we were seeing them for the first time in abject disbelief about what was happening, we probably didn't know the third of it. We saw some instances of great heroism. The officer once again leading some of the rioters away from the Senate chamber. preserving life, preserving the sanctity of physical capacity there to continue with the United States counting of the votes that day. But the horrific nature of the attack itself, not fully exposed until months afterwards, and even as late as recent weeks, as we hear from the House committee report. So number one, as somebody who used to prosecute violent crime cases, I saw in that the kind of thing that was the subject of criminal prosecutions. And it did not escape me in that moment, as it did, I'm sure, did not escape the views of many other prosecutors out there, that these were crimes, not simply attacks on our government, but crimes against our republic, to be sure, but also in violation of our federal criminal code. And sure enough, we know now that well in excess of 900 people being prosecuted. The second observation that I would make in response to Joe's very good invitation to talk philosophically about this is what we have learned in the meantime. That is that even though it was in, if you will, disarray, a horrific riot, a huge amount of just crazed behavior on that day, nonetheless, began to think on that day, and sure enough, it came to be true, that had to be organized in some way. And sure enough, whether it's through groups like the Oath Keepers, the Proud Boys on trial these weeks, and even more significantly, all that we have found since that time about the invitation to come to Washington, D.C., the former president saying it's going to be wild, that invitation, as Liz Cheney said, striking the match, throwing that match in, encouraging people to do that. The assembly by members of the president's senior advisory staff, John Eastman, Rudy Giuliani, to put together this multifaceted attempt that went far beyond just the attack on the Capitol. That, too, a huge disclosure since that time, that what we saw on January 6th, horrific, dramatic, and certainly the most visual part of this, was nonetheless a component of a larger enterprise to try to stop the counting, to try to keep Donald Trump in power. And sure enough, that has come to be true. And that is the reason why the investigation that we've talked about already this morning and many other mornings is so very important, to ensure that there is also justice brought to those people who may not have been on the Capitol Hill that day, but nonetheless were responsible for organizing it, for putting it together, for encouraging people, for inciting people to do exactly what happened. That's got to go forward, and that's got to be a part of our history, as troubling as that is going to be in this coming calendar year. I believe that the U.S. Department of Justice is going to go ahead with that and prosecute the individuals, maybe including members of Congress, as we talked right before the break, maybe including a former president for his involvement in this activity. We're going to be seeing that, I believe, early in this calendar year. So, Joe, thank you so much for that question and that comment. As always, we appreciate callers. And Jake, we appreciate your calling in also from Eureka, California, to be joining us this morning on Morning Cannolis. Thanks for your comment or your question, Jake.
Hi, I'd just like to bring up a new subject, but first I'd like to comment on these, you know, right-wing domestic terrorist traitors like the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. They should be all thrown under the jail, as far as I'm concerned. There is no justification for what they did on January 6th, and anybody who tries to justify it is just justifying criminal, treasonous behavior. And here, with you look at the Oath Keepers. I mean, what kind of person decides, I want to join an armed domestic terrorist group led by a person who shot out his own eye? Stuart Rhodes is potentially doing up to 60 years in prison. Really, you want to follow the guy around who shot out his own eye? That's your idea of a leader? But anyways, my news subject that I want to bring up just real quick was at the top of the hour, the network news talked about the 6-year-old child in Virginia who yes. intentionally shot his female teacher in their 30s. And the name of the school, as we all recall, you know, various school names from the school shootings over the years, like Columbine and Sandy Hook, for instance. The name of the school is Rich Neck Elementary. When I first read it, I swear to God, I thought it said Redneck Elementary, which maybe should be the new name of the school, or at least NRA Elementary. A 6-year-old with a gun. I'd like to know what kind of legal charges may be pending for that child's parents for allowing a 6-year-old sure. to get a hold of a gun and shoot his teacher.
Sure. Great comments, both, Jake. Appreciate tremendously your calling in and raising these issues. Concurrence about outrage on both of them. As to the Oath Keepers, Proud Boys, you're absolutely right. I talked a little bit this morning about these other things the Proud Boys are doing out there. Certainly insurrection at the top of the list. People who join these groups, plainly misled, plainly somehow believing that this is going to affect some sort of justice in America when just the opposite is true. So I share your complete confusion about how these groups are attractive. And again, hoping that when these prosecutions go forward, you mentioned, of course, the Stuart Rhodes and the others convicted recently, they're going to be sentenced. We hope that the deterrent impact of what's going to happen there spreads wide and far in America, and that people who think about joining an Oath Keeper group or a Proud Boys group or other groups out there think not just once, but twice and three and four times, because that's the consequence of doing this kind of completely un-American and violent activity. So concurrence completely, Jake, with your thoughts on that. As to this issue, again, which has also been the subject of our civic media news this morning, about the shooting by this very young student of his teacher. A couple of comments about that. Number one, we know well that this kind of thing, as you indicated, Jake, much too common in America. We've come to understand them by virtue of the names of these schools. And that in itself, while it's important to herald the good things that go on in education, the fact that places like Columbine and Sandy Hook, we now know them by virtue of the violence and the horrific losses of life, that in itself should be enough to give us pause. I'm among those people in America who believes that we have too many guns in America. And this event of just this past week or so underscores that a six-year-old getting access to weapons. Those groups, I'm proud to be affiliated with one of them here in Wisconsin called WAVE, that advocates for a number of great, responsible, reasonable, rational limitations on gun use, gun access. And one of them, one of those things, is ensuring that guns, when they are, again, constitutionally, under a couple of Supreme Court cases, entitled to possess a weapon, plainly, if you're an adult, for defensive purposes, and now also on the streets of America. Nonetheless, reasonable, rational restrictions inside those broad constitutional Second Amendment purposes, plainly to ensure that young people do not have access to these guns. The question, Jake, you raised about responsibility for parents, absolutely. We have seen in recent times, not only on both coasts, but also in the Midwest, charges against parents for either promoting or assisting or in some way supporting access of their children, sometimes even their adult children, to guns. And that concept, that kind of vicarious liability, is a part of the law. And you have to believe that prosecutors in this most recent event will be taking a look at that and determining whether or not parental authorities should be held responsible in our criminal courts for the conduct and this horrific conduct resulting in this shooting. We'll talk more about those kinds of issues right after this break, right here on Morning Cannolis.
Retail all across America is changing.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start, and it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
My fine guest, Maggie Dawn, attorney at law. I thought that the laws of the United States were supposed to evolve with societal norms. The vast majority of Americans, 70% approximately, believe that Roe v. Wade should be the law of the land. So that seems exactly contrary to the way the courts are supposed to evolve with our nation.
I'll just say this. The guy in Colorado can't be forced to make a gay wedding cake, but I can be forced to make a baby. I don't know about you, but that makes no damn sense to me.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Finish your high school diploma for you and your family. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Partly cloudy skies this afternoon with a high of 33. Northeast winds around 5 miles an hour. Tonight, lows level off around 22. Cloudy skies with a few peaks of sun. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 34. Partly cloudy skies Monday. Clouds on the increase by Tuesday. Highs in the upper 30s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 23 degrees.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
And we are back. And my name is Jim Santel. This is Morning Cannolis. We're talking once again about issues related to law, government, and justice in America. Right before the break, taking this very important phone call from Jake, who is commenting about this event now described in the media, a six-year-old shooting his teacher, and commenting about the possibility of prosecution against parents for failing not only to keep guns in their home in a safe and a secure mechanism, a safe and secure situation, so their six-year-old, for example, does not get a hold of it. That has got to be a part of any rational response, not only to these kinds of events, but also to ensure that our Second Amendment rights, while they are established by the Constitution now, as interpreted by the Supreme Court, still ensure that we are safe and secure. Again, every major thoughtful advocate with respect to the Second Amendment understands and appreciates and embraces this notion that safety at the home, keeping guns out of the hands of children, is a key component of, again, many of these irrational and reasonable regulations that can be imposed. When that fails to happen, prosecutors should and do on a regular basis take a look at the responsibility of the adult for that behavior of their young person, their minor child. And so we'll look forward. We'll see what happens in that particular case. Again, very much appreciating the comment Jake made about that particular incident, having to do once again with the enforcement of the rule of law in America. We've taken another caller right now. Dick, so glad to have you with us this morning on Morning Cannolis, calling in from Madison. Thanks, Dick, for your comment or your question.
Well, I hate to say what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it. I've thought a lot about January 6th and all of the rest that happened over the last couple of years, and I can't help but think that if the majority of those people would have been people of color, you would have seen much, much stronger sentences, much faster through the system, so to speak. And proof of it, I listened to Reverend Sharpton talking about just having to get a permit for a demonstration for Black Lives Matter and all the hoops they had to jump through. And yet this group with guns hanging out, sitting within blocks of the area in trees with weapons, and on and on and on it goes. But I'm sorry. The way the former guy, too, cleared the street early that year in June, just everything that went on is just...
Right, as he was going over to Lafayette Square, right, and away the protesters. Once again, from my perspective, violating the First Amendment rights of people to protest and people to assemble. That's part of our Constitution, too. That, very offensive at the time.
go beyond that, Dick, to your very good point here, that the incitement, again, a part of the of this overall plan, not only to undermine our election, but one does pause when one thinks about the response, if you will, to what happened on that day. If there had been people of color on that day who had been attacking our Capitol in a much greater population than they were, one cannot help but wonder if the response, frankly, not only politically, but even by law enforcement, may not have been different than it was. So very much appreciate your comment. We are going to look forward to further examination of those kinds of important issues. Dick, very much appreciate your observation about that. The frustration of the inequitable application of the rule of law in America, and that justice, although it is imperfect, is also the best justice system we have, also somewhat slow, as you indicated, Dick, in terms of getting all of this remedied and addressed. Let's talk about a couple of other things that are moving ahead, but also not with great speed. Again, in connection with the January 6th event, we know that the January 6th committee has subpoenaed many people, including among them Steve Bannon, the former senior advisor to the president. He has been convicted of 2 counts of contempt of Congress. We know that the January 6th committee also subpoenaed Mark Meadows, the former chief of staff. The United States Department of Justice has declined to prosecute him, based in part upon the fact that he did comply, at least in some part, with the request of the House committee for documents, and then kind of withdrew that support. Nonetheless, a declination there. But there's a third person out there, Peter Navarro. Peter Navarro, also a major senior advisor to the former president, also charged with contempt by the United States Department of Justice based upon a referral of the House committee. His trial was set to go back in November, but Judge Ahmed Mehta, we talked about him a little bit in the first hour this morning, was obliged to postpone that lawsuit, that prosecution against Peter Navarro for contempt of Congress from November until this coming week, January 11th. Peter Navarro undergoing trial now for contempt of Congress. He is the third person subject to a referral for contempt of Congress. Again, Steve Bannon previously charged and convicted, Mark Meadows declined, and now Peter Navarro going ahead in front of Judge Mehta and a jury that he will bring together on 2 counts of ignoring that subpoena based upon his involvement in the January 6th attack. And so again, all of that related to January 6th, both directly and derivatively. We also have another caller calling in from Rock County. Rico, your comment or question this morning about any of the broad issues that we're discussing here on our broadcast.
Yeah, hey, Jim, I got a question for you. Maybe you could help me out with this. I was wondering, is there a mechanism, a legal route, or, you know, some kind of tool that we the people of Wisconsin have that would enable us, maybe through petition or something of that nature, to demand, and I'm speaking about Ron Johnson here, an investigation and, you know, if necessary, charges or what have you, but initially the investigation. I'm just wondering, is there a route here? Is there something that we, the people, the voters that were almost disenfranchised, is there a legal route forward on this? And I'll take your answer off here. Thanks a lot.
Sure, Rico. And again, following up in part on a question that Joe asked in our first hour, thank you again for that. Again, this news breaking this past week, coming out of additional transcripts and reporting from the January 6th committee that our senior senator may have been involved in trying to influence the electoral votes through our state legislature. I'm going to chat more about Rico's good question and comment right after the break, and we're going to talk more about that in just a moment.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Butler to Windlake, always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. After a 15th round of voting, Republican Kevin McCarthy is finally Speaker of the House.
And now the hard work begins. What we do here today, next week, next month, next year, will set the tone for everything that follows.
More violent storms on the way for California, says Mike Bettis at the Weather Channel.
Rain really concentrated in the central coast up through Northern California. As we go through the weekend and early next week, more rain in Southern California, expecting flooding from L.A. to San Diego.
We're learning more now about what led investigators to suspect Brian Kohberger in the killings of those Idaho college students.
The house where the victims were killed is still considered an active crime scene and will be closed off until at least February 1st. As for Kohberger, he'll be back here in court next Thursday.
That's CBS News correspondent Omar Villafranca at the scene. CBS News Brief. I'm Allison Keyes.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
The devil's advocates.
But do you think the Biden administration's calling up Laura Ingraham and making the announcement to the world that we're invading Russia with amphibious troops? Come on, Trump. I mean, and I want to hear fine Trumpsters that want to defend that crap. You know, he's a little late for the early bird buffet. Maybe you people were just naive marks who believed he was a super genius.
Then I got some land I'd like to sell you outside of Fukushima.
Check out the entire podcast library at darnwi.com.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio, VO5.
Let's do it on the dance floor. Let's do it while we can. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show, and we are now on the air in Waukesha, live weeknights 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at thericksmithshow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
What is dedication?
People ask, how your children learn how to ride a bike and you didn't. I just created an environment where they taught themselves and all I had to do was be there.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more.
We are back. Thanks for staying with us in this second hour of our discussion of some of the big news stories of this past week in law, government, and justice in America. Right before the break, I was talking with one of our good callers, Rico, is calling in to inquire, what does one do? What does one do if one is animated enough, and I suspect virtually all of us are, about prosecutions when it comes to January 6th, attempts by individuals out there, groups out there, to undermine our democracy, to compromise our republic, to overthrow the election of 2020. What do you do? Is there a mechanism for citizens, private citizens, to seek criminal investigations and prosecutions? And the answer really is yes, there is. The decision ultimately, whether it's at the state level, the federal level, to prosecute is one pretty much designated to the exclusive discretion and judgment of the prosecutors. And it's pretty much unappealable. You can't go back into court and say the attorney general failed to prosecute, and for that reason, there's a remedy that you have. But you can, in fact, have an influence on that process. And so to Rico and to others out there who are animated, and Rico's question was prompted specifically by this reporting coming out of the January 6th report this past week, that our senior senator may have attempted to reach back into our state legislature to get the state legislature, if you will, to try to change our electoral votes as a way of ensuring that Joe Biden would not be elected, not be sworn in, not be counted as the duly elected president. And again, in a way, as I said before, kind of a variation on this Moore versus Harper matter, this independent state legislature doctrine pending in front of the United States Supreme Court. What do you do? What do you do if you're animated about this and you haven't seen a prosecution? I always advocate to do what our Constitution contemplates, and that is petition government. And how do you do that? It's the old-fashioned way. It's being in touch with our elected and our appointed representatives. Send them a letter. Write about your outrage, if you will, that these events have happened. Express your views that as a citizen of the United States of America, you have standing because this is your vote, this is your country, this is your process, and you want to see that people who are attempting to undermine this process are brought to justice. Write a letter to Lisa Monaco. Write a letter to the Attorney General, Merrick Garland. Write a letter to our Wisconsin Attorney General, Josh Call. Write a letter to your state, your local prosecutors, encouraging them, DAs, state's attorneys in other states, encouraging them to in their investigations. Now, they're not compelled to do something by virtue of your letters, but do they take mail? Do they open mail? The answer is absolutely yes. I worked for 30 years inside the U.S. Department of Justice, including very closely with Janet Reno, including very closely with Eric Holder. And they respond to, and they are reacting to, not simply the political things that happen in the world, but also what America is saying. And so if you do have, as Rico does, an animated vision for what should happen here, be in touch with them. Let them know about how strongly you feel that there should, in fact, only be investigation, but also prosecutions, and support that. Support that when it comes to the election of future prosecutors. That means going to the polls for DAs. That means going to the polls for presidents, because that's where attorneys general come from. That's where U.S. attorneys come from, by virtue of who you elect as the president of the United States of America. So great question, Rico. Invoke your rights under the Constitution to petition government for remedies that are out there. A couple more issues having to do with the enforcement of the law and the rule of law in the United States of America just from this past week. One of them having to do with the decision just this past week by a judge in New York. His name is Arthur Engoron. We've heard from him before. He is the judge in Manhattan. This is a state court proceeding brought by Letitia James, alleging that the Trump Organization and members of the Trump family improperly valued various properties. She's seeking about $250 million based upon this fraudulent misleading of banks and other financial institutions. Well, this past week, Judge Arthur Engoron refused to grant a motion by the former president to dismiss that lawsuit, refused to do it. And beyond that, pretty much chastised the attorneys for the former president for what they're doing. He said lawyers for Trump and the organization should have known better than to recycle what he said were frivolous, meritless arguments in paperwork seeking the dismissal of this New York Attorney General lawsuit brought by Letitia James. He criticized the Trump lawyers through a 9-page decision. He quoted baseball great Yogi Berra by writing this. He said, the bulk of the arguments advanced by the Trump attorneys, including Trump's oft-repeated claim that the lawsuit was part of some politically motivated witch hunt, again, Justice Engoron said, were deja vu all over again. In other words, he's seen this before. They're simply recycled arguments. He threatened to punish the Trump lawyers, but said that excoriating them here in this decision is enough. The lawsuit, again, filed back in September, alleged that the former president and the Trump Organization had misled these financial institutions about the value of some of these major prized assets, including things like golf courses and hotels that bear his name. And so this past week, not only the denial of the motion to dismiss that lawsuit so it goes forward, but also chastising, excoriating the lawyers for, again, recycling these age-old and unsuccessful and meritless arguments, the judge coming close to sanctioning them for that kind of activity in their court. And then in another court, also in a federal court, this one related to Mar-a-Lago. We've talked a lot about this on this broadcast, and not going to revisit that in great detail, but recall well these attempts by the Department of Justice over a period of months last year through requests, letter requests, through a grand jury subpoena, and ultimately through a search warrant to get back all of the documents that the former president had improperly and, yes, illegally taken under a number of federal statutes to Mar-a-Lago and perhaps other places. You may recall well that the Trump lawyers, the Trump entities, had told the judge that they were presiding over these matters, that various representatives were, in fact, that the law team had hired some individuals to search places like the Trump Tower in New York, the Bedminster Golf Club, an office location in Florida, and a storage unit in Florida, all of those in an attempt to try to determine whether there were any more documents out there beyond what had been produced previously, beyond what had been generated during the course of the court-authorized search of Mar-a-Lago in early August. And why is this back in the news? Well, just this past week, a federal judge, again presiding over this matter, required the president's former president's attorneys to turn over the names of those people who were hired to search those four properties. And presumably, apparently, according to court records, those names were given over on Wednesday night. Why is that significant? Why is that important to note this morning? It's important because plainly this matter is not done. We're now going to ask about the names of those people who actually did this attempt to engage in due diligence, to find other documents out there. Presumably, this story isn't over as the court, the federal court here, continues to monitor whether there was contempt. What kinds of things did the Trump organization, Trump lawyers, Trump representatives do and not do in complying with grand jury subpoenas? All of that relevant, because you may recall well that in the supporting affidavit for the search warrant back in August, and in other reference points, there's this reference to obstruction of justice. And we haven't heard a lot beyond just the seizure of these documents and other attempts to get them, but a continuing sense that during the course of 2022 and perhaps even to this day, continuing attempts by representatives of the Trump organization, arguably by Trump lawyers as well, to obstruct justice, to prevent the Department of Justice from getting those documents back, from pursuing the investigation that we know now is underway related to the taking of those documents from the White House back in January of 2021. Again, another thing in the news just this past week. I promised at the start of our two-hour broadcast this morning that we touch on some other matters, leaving Washington, D.C., leaving these other issues that are also grabbing headlines around America. Let's talk about some of them, also the subject of some of the news reporting right here on Civic Media, the broadcasts of this station. This one having to do with this fellow named Brian Koberger. He's 28 years old. He was a graduate student at Washington State University, now charged with the horrific murders of the four students at the University of Idaho. Just this past week, again, in connection with his extradition from Pennsylvania back to Idaho to face those charges, we have seen some key revelations in this Idaho murder case. And where do they come from? They come from the supporting affidavit that was submitted by law enforcement to justify the charges to this point with respect to those four murders. And why do I raise this? Well, it gives us some insight not only into the case, but it underscores the importance of good law enforcement and this notion that law enforcement on a regular basis does indeed assemble credible, reliable, material evidence to support what it's doing. We've talked a lot about this affidavit, I just did, in connection with the Mar-a-Lago event. A lot of concern about, what did the FBI do? What did they know before going in? And we've got this multi-page, almost 40-page affidavit in that instance. a lot of that was redacted. But we know that the law enforcement there presented to the magistrate judge a huge amount of information to suggest, to support this notion of probable cause to go in to find that there was criminal activity, criminal evidence in that location. This Idaho murder case underscores the same civics kind of point. And the prosecution, the government this past week released that affidavit. It is available for reviewing. And it underscores, again, not only some significant information about things that we know now about the investigation, but supports this notion that law enforcement does not do things without a credible, reasonable, material basis for doing it. Subject to challenge? Absolutely. Subject to review in courts? You bet it is. Subject to review in trials by juries? Absolutely. That's our process. But nonetheless, very explicit things set forth in this affidavit in support of the charges against this Brian Koberger now back in Idaho, including things like the roommate saw a masked man in the very premises prior to the discovery of this by law enforcement. Investigators found a knife sheath at the scene, that also being disclosed, a very relevant piece of information, as I'll mention in just a moment or so. We know also from the affidavit now coming out that the suspect, this Brian Koberger, actually applied to work at a local law enforcement department long before his alleged murders on that campus. We know that there was a car that passed the victim's house many times that evening of these horrific murders. We know about a dog barking and perhaps responding in some way to what was going on that night. We understand also that one of the victims may actually have been awake prior to the entrance and the actual events, the murders themselves. The coroner had stated previously that all four victims were previously asleep. But in these new court releases, maybe one of them had been awake. Zaina Kernodle received a DoorDash delivery about 4 a.m., which was just before the arrival of this vehicle on the site. A forensic review of her phone suggested that she was using a TikTok app at around 4:12 a.m., suggesting once again something about her actually being awake prior to her own murder. Again, graphic, horrific details coming out of, again, this very specific graphic affidavit. We know that a campus officer found Koberger's car at the scene. We know that beyond that, as the news reporting is indicating just this morning, this phone was disconnected during the killings themselves. The police suggest in this affidavit that the suspect may have actually returned to the crime scene. And again, very significantly, the DNA sample was taken from the trash in Pennsylvania, trash that was put out by Koberger's father, and then brought together with respect to the DNA found on that knife sheet. Again, so huge numbers of things that show you how it is that this investigation into these heinous, horrific murders was put together, and also telling us a lot about how law enforcement works when it comes to whether it's a Mar-a-Lago-type situation, a white-collar documents event, or something as grisly, as horrific as the murders of these four young people at the University of Idaho. We hasten to add, of course, as always, that in our system of justice, all defendants, including Brian Koberger, presumed innocent until proven guilty by a jury in one of our courts of our United States of America. We're going to talk more about that and other issues in our final segment. Stay with us right here on Morning Cannolis.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to scent season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season.
And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm. Built for real life.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
I'm 54, so it's too late to start saving for retirement, right?
Not right. Starting to save, even in your 50s, can really make a difference. At aceyourretirement.org, in just 3 minutes, you'll get a free personalized retirement plan. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Partly cloudy this afternoon, with daytime highs approaching 33. Winds out of the northeast, around 5 miles an hour. Lows dip down to about 22. Tonight, mainly cloudy. Mainly cloudy skies expected. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 34. Dry with temps above average Monday and Tuesday, and highs in the upper 30s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 23 degrees.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
We are back for our final segment this morning on Morning Cannolis. Always delighted to take your comments and questions. We're talking about many different things this morning, including some state court prosecutions out there as well. We'll get back to those in just a moment or so. But Tom from Cedarburg calling in. Appreciate your comment or question as well. Thanks, Tom.
Hi. I just want to say, Jim, I think you have a great show, and it's really fitting for the times we're living in to hear some accurate information on what's really happening and why it's happening and stuff. I'd also like to say, too, that you have some really good people calling in. And I'd like to point out, especially the gal named Joel, she seems really articulate and intelligent. I'd like to see someone like that run for office or something and be able to represent us.
Absolutely, Tom. I appreciate your comments about the program. We try to do our best here to be somewhat apolitical, not always successful in doing that, but most importantly, focusing on civics, right? As you just said, talking about what's really going on out there, accurate information. We can disagree, you and I can, and others can, based upon what we should do, but gosh, we've got to have a basic understanding of civics. We've got to have a basic understanding of what did, in fact, happen out there. So appreciate that comment. And yes, concur in your views and also the views of people like Joe and others who've called in, all good folks out there who are giving this some serious thought, being balanced and reasonable and rational. So appreciate that very much. Absolutely. Tom, sure. Thanks for calling in this morning. Appreciate that, Tom. And we'll look forward to more callers down the road, and not only in future cast, but also this morning if we still have an opportunity to do just that. I promised at the outset that we would talk about a couple of other matters that have been also in the news this past week. You recall as well that on Christmas Day, some power substations in Washington State were attacked. And specifically, those power stations in Tacoma, Washington, thousands were left without power after some vandals forced their way into four substations, damaged some equipment there, leading to a fire in one instance. 14,000 people over the holidays were left without power from those attacks. Substations owned by the Tacoma Public Utilities and Puget Sound Energy Corporation. Well, just this past week, there were two individuals who were charged with those attacks. Their names are Matthew Greenwood and Jeremy Cahan. They've been charged with conspiracy once again, to damage energy facilities. And Greenwood faces a separate charge of possessing illegal short-barreled rifles. Again, a gun charge related to his attack, along with that of Crahan, on this energy facility. They apparently plotted to knock out power from four different substations. Power in those first two facilities was, in fact, out. The pair then broke into a local business to steal from the cash register. And all of this being provided after Greenwood himself was arrested, along with Crahan. Again, the reason why that's significant is not only for what happened in Washington, but this, again, continuing notion that this is now an appropriate thing to do. We know that law enforcement agencies are investigating at least 8 other similar attacks on power stations in 4 states just in this past month alone, including in North Carolina. And we recall well that in the late fall of last year, too. Investigations underway by, again, local authorities, the FBI as well, to address this latest attempt, if you will, to shut down our nation by attacking our power sources. Again, hopefully the deterrent lesson here is you will get arrested, you will get charged, presumably get convicted and sentenced for doing this. Again, an attempt to undermine the very way in which we live in America. Finally, as we go forward here in our last moments, wanted to comment about the fact that we had a major sentencing this past week of Rick Singer. He was the mastermind of this sprawling college admissions scam, known kind of colloquially as Varsity Blues. He was sentenced this past Wednesday to 3.5 years in federal prison. And that was the longest sentence in a case that, of course, has rattled and really disturbed America's education system. He was the central figure, you may recall, in this scam involving wealthy parents who were, if you will, desperate to get their children into some elite universities. Huge sums of money to cheat on standardized tests, bribe university coaches, do other things, including sports falsifications. Singer pled guilty to racketeering conspiracy, money laundering, conspiracy to defraud the U.S., and obstruction of justice way back in March of 2019. He did, in fact, cooperate. He cooperated with the government's investigation in the months prior to the public announcement of the case and in the years since. We know well that that prosecution, that investigation, brought into its ambit quite literally about 50 people who were charged and arrested, including some of those coaches, including some test administrators, including some prominent CEOs of businesses out there, and yes, the actresses Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughman. During his sentencing this past week, the defendant said, "I lost my ethical values and have so much to regret. To be frank, I'm ashamed of myself." Well, probably true of all of the other defendants as well. We've talked a lot about deterrence on this broadcast. Deterrence about other people who engage in this kind of activity, not only to stop them, the individuals like Mr. Singer, William Rick Singer, again, sentenced this past week to 3.5 years, but also those people who engage in academic fraud, and yes, broadly, other kinds of fraud that might be out there. That's the purpose behind prosecution, to stop the individuals and also send the appropriate messages out there about other people who might be thinking about doing the same kind of thing. Finally, in our last moments together here, about 2 minutes or so, wanted to return to an issue that we have talked a lot about, and we're going to be spending a lot of time talking about it in the future weeks here in 2023, and that is the United States Supreme Court. I made reference already to this Moore versus Harper case, this fringe doctrine involving the independent state legislature doctrine, the notion that somehow our legislatures should be the one who make decisions about electoral votes and other things when it comes to voting in America. Well, this coming week, the Supreme Court back in session once again, January 9th, which is Monday, Tuesday the 10th, Wednesday, a number of different cases. On Monday, have a case they're going to be taking oral argument on communications, both legal and non-legal, having to do with the attorney-client privilege, that coming up on Monday. Also on Monday, the Ohio National Guard, it attempted to end a collective bargaining agreement with employees, whether they violated federal law in doing that. That's coming up on Monday. Tuesday, an issue involving the National Labor Relations Act and whether it's preempted and its access to justice, if you will, is preempted by a state court claim for destroying employers' property in a labor dispute. Finally, on Wednesday, an 11th Amendment case involving the Economic Stability Act in Puerto Rico, having to do with its sovereign immunity, territorial claims there as well. 4 major cases coming up in the Supreme Court in this coming week. We'll be talking about that and more in those future weeks. Join us again every Saturday morning here at Morning Cannolis. Thank you for being with me and with my producer, Calvin. We'll look forward to hearing from you again next Saturday here on the studios of Civic Media.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. Get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.